The tape is running. And let's call to order the January meeting of the Westland Public Safety Advisory Board. With that, let's do introductions since we have some new people with us. I'll start. My name is Tom Friedland. I am the current chair of the advisory board, and to my right is our occasional full-time scribe.
Chris Dutton. Judy Wickman, board member.
Karen Hague, new person.
Mike Salvaggio, board member.
Alicia Schreier, community relations coordinator for the city of Westland.
Preston Fedor, new board member.
Yeah. Bill Relier, city council, filling in for Jules this evening.
Ron Hosley, Westland PD.
Stephen Myers, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue.
Oh, I didn't realize you had...
You thought it was somebody.
You opened your mouth, I recognized the voice. All of a sudden, it's like, there's somebody. Sounds just like you.
Very
okay, with that, we have our agenda. I believe we need to potentially add a little bit in here since there's some discussion regarding... status as to whether we are continuing as a board or whether we are going to look at some other arrangement with the city council. There was also an email that came into the advisory board regarding a research project that is somebody is attempting to do from University of Oregon that asked some information about board members that I do want to address before we get too far in here. Was there anything else to be added?
Where do you want to put these things?
Probably the board status with the possible changes, and we may want to just discuss that first and shift down the board officers because, well, we're not sure where we are. We'll put the U of O request first topic in new business. Was there anything else? I don't remember if we had any other tidbits that flew in. Anyone else?
I had submitted an email
on the...
Which discussed the topic about the residential care system.
Right, I think we can put that under the disaster preparedness without any trouble. That's a follow-up from previously. That was the memo, the email I was trying to remember.
Were you going to speak or just listen? Or
I'm just here for whatever you need me for.
No presentations?
No.
Okay.
Well, we'll work you in and get feedback from you as we go through. Any other changes or modifications to our agenda? And I got water spots on the middle of my glasses, which is why I'm taking them off, because you're all blurry. Either way, you're blurry. Any other changes? And we have a motion to approve.
So motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Let's delve into the issue that came out of our meeting with the city council in November on the changes that we might be entertaining regarding us as a board entity. There was a concern about potentially changing our day of meeting regardless of what our classification is, so it doesn't conflict with the city council on some of their meetings. I don't know if there's a day of the week that is better for anyone or any prohibitions on any particular days. I did check with Captain. He had no qualms with any of the particular days with anything that he has in his official duties. Obviously, I don't think anyone's in favor of moving this to anything that interferes with the weekend. So is there a day of the week that anyone has a better choice on than Mondays?
Does anybody have a day that's blocked out? Like, it'd be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Tuesday evenings are kind of booked for me.
Okay. What's your Thursdays?
I like Thursdays.
I'll say Thursday.
You know, one problem I have with Thursdays is that I am often out of town on Thursdays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now that you mention it.
Yeah, so Wednesday?
Wednesday would be tolerable.
I didn't realize aren't you a doctor?
Yes.
So you're coming and going?
Coming and going all the time.
Got it.
I believe the Willamette Neighborhood Association meets here on Wednesday evenings.
Oh.
But just once. We'll have to make sure that we're not that week during the month.
I didn't hear half of what you said. I'm sorry.
The Willamette Neighborhood Association once a month on Wednesday meets here.
Do you know which week of the month?
I think
the
first.
Second? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we have traditionally been in the fourth week of the month.
Yeah.
I have no qualms in changing that.
I know that they're not the fourth week of the month.
No, I went to the last one and it was, I thought it was the 10th or 11th.
Yeah, I think, now that you say it, you might think so.
Do we need to check with your department to see if this room would be free?
I think usually this time of night it is free. I know they do have a schedule for a lot of training and things in this coming up next couple months, but
in the evening,
I don't think it would be an issue at this time of night, because usually training's over by 5 or 6 at the latest.
So that would be on the 26th of
That's
February.
What I was just looking
if we
for.
This next month.
Is there anything, any issue on a day that comes from the city council? Other than avoiding the conflict with Monday. Okay. What was the thought that was in the... I thought I printed out Jules' email.
I was thinking I could grab it real quick.
If you've got it handy, I printed out the one from U of O. I thought I printed out the other one, but it's not in my pile here. But she was discussing the concept of changing us from a board or looking at us in a format similar to a subcommittee. I don't know what the distinction is or how that would affect anything that we do or what we're attempting to accomplish. Do you know what Jules was implying with that?
I don't.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I spoke with Councillor Walters last week about the PSAB organization. I think the intention is to have a full PSAB with less frequent meetings, but subcommittees of the board to meet more frequently and to specialize in certain tasks.
You got it.
That makes sense.
Yours is larger, though.
I'm older.
Are you sure?
That kind of that makes sense, I think, because.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that we are meeting with on a monthly basis is literally a rehash, and that perhaps could be addressed on a smaller level, especially since our staffing is now full. We don't have any openings, do we? We've got 7.
I think we're full.
Okay.
Yeah, so the if you needed to meet with, I don't know who you're sharing the driver safety with, but...
The people that have been involved in, Mark isn't here tonight.
Yeah.
But the two people that had been, when we first put it together, left. And so I've been dealing with it on my own on the teen driving program. And
so
that's been a challenge just to get something going with the school.
Well, maybe one of the two new members could join you on that. Let's see, are you familiar with the teen driving and safety?
Well, why don't we hold that till we get to that particular segment?
Because that might be something that could
And it's certainly a possibility to create a subcommittee for that. I know originally, when I first came on the board, we did not meet in the summer months, so we would go January through May or June. We didn't meet, I think it was June, July, and August, then picked it up in September, and then, so it was about half as often, mainly during the school year, for lack of a better description of it. And a couple of years ago, the chair wanted to have us meet more often, and it became a monthly thing. I don't know if it's necessary to be monthly. I think there's some things, especially like the teen driving program, where, yeah, we do need to have some people involved with that meeting leading up to the start of the school year, but there's no reason that we have to, as a group, necessarily meet. And I don't know if we want to potentially experiment with a quarterly meeting or maybe every other month for the first 6 months to see how that pans out, and then look at subdividing into potential committees that would address our two main areas of concern, which are disaster preparedness and our teen driver safety program. I don't know. That's thought. Any feedback or ideas from anybody? Yes?
Well, I'd like to venture out with the every other as a start. We seem to have seasons where there's more activity. If we're going to go back to having an annual disaster preparedness fair, then we need all hands on deck. And
it might be that we have to have a couple of meetings
there
close
might
together.
Be, however, you know, it may be that they won't be necessary because those other meetings are happening more frequently, like, you know, weekly, and if there's enough people, but in order to convey back to the formal group and see, you know,
what
we need to do, I don't know. When I've been involved with, you know, a number of other organizations that had active committees that seemed to work really well so that the committees could report back, and it gave another month to where some would even meet in the same venue, but that was where the committee work was happening and some of those agendas move forward. So I would recommend that we
and have the flexibility
venture out to an every other and see how that goes,
and then have the potential if necessary to hold an extra meeting if, like, disaster preparedness of that. That fair is usually, what, September?
We usually held it in the, it's been in the fall in the past,
so
in September.
So there may be a need for something to be held prior to that in preparation if that comes up. Maybe we'll adjust the schedule through the summer if, as need be.
In the past, we've had to have a couple of very detailed meetings prior to that, and Alicia would be involved with us, of course, and any sponsors, and we may not have the same venue anymore. I don't know if the Mormon Church is going to host that. I thought I heard they won't be. Is that accurate? Or?
I haven't heard it.
So we have to get a venue and vendors, and there's so much work to do months prior to that, so we would have to have some special meetings like we've done in the past.
And maybe not exactly every other month per se, but because if we meet here January, the skipping it to March, then we'd be May. Meeting in July may not be necessary, but if the disaster fair might need an August-September combination.
Sure. Although, I mean, most of those organizational meetings occur during the day over at the library, at least leading up to the last one. So, like I say, it's difficult to say.
I think
every other kind of makes sense for now while we feel out.
Well, that'd give us, like I said, 6 months. That would give us roughly to May to see if that works out. the biggest concern I would have with that, and I speak from my own experience, is that it's easy to forget that you have a meeting.
Is this the month? That's
well, you can send out a notice, and as long as we have everybody's email, we can all communicate.
Yeah, one of the problems that I have with the public safety email is with my email system. It's that it doesn't. It's not functioning well with the city system. So I have a Gmail account which I don't use, and I don't check it that often, so I'm afraid, I'm apprehensive to use that one per se, but perhaps if I sent a reminder to you or Chris to send out to the group, if you don't have, I don't know if you guys have had problems in sending anything to
the last one, Kathy, is it Molesky?
Molesky.
Last one she sent, I didn't get, and
okay.
I only heard about the training thing this week.
Okay, so you might have responded. You might be having the same. Did you get the thing from the U of O?
Yeah,
okay.
Got that one.
I'm not sure. We need to work something out and just do something like a reminder. I mean, I knew I had set up the agenda, but come the end of last week, it's like, oh, isn't there a meeting on Monday? And so I know I have a problem with that.
Do you have Preston and Karen's email addresses?
I was given them, and I sent them out to you guys, didn't I?
No.
I thought I...
Or if you did...
It didn't get through.
Check my spam.
I got an email from Tony that had their names and email information on it, and I thought I added it to a list that I sent out to everybody, and I sent it individual emails, not through the public safety one. So
I think we have a communication problem.
Yeah, well, I may not have. I don't know. I'm gonna have to check my laptop when I get home and see. But I will. If I don't have it, I will forward that out so everybody has everybody else's email. But I know I got our new people's emails from Tony when I got, you know, the notice from her that they had been approved. It did make the Westland Tidings. I was able to Google that and find that in there. Aren't you excited?
At this point, do you want a motion that we meet every other month starting now, or do we need to talk more about this?
I would like to suggest that we explore the idea of doing the quarterly meeting schedule, allowing that we have another meeting exactly next month in February before we begin that, so that we have a chance to kind of establish our new organizational structure.
Think about, look for flaws, problems.
And then at that time, we can assign a subcommittee to work on the emergency preparedness fair, which can be as needed, and come back to the full board for any particular authorizations that will require a motion.
So you would prefer four meetings per year instead of the every other, correct?
Four
Is
meetings
that what you're expressing?
My preference would be four meetings of the full board, but more frequent meetings of each subcommittee.
Provided we have an option if we need an extra meeting to throw it in.
Exactly.
Okay.
But I don't think that
and
we should
that
start
can be decided at our next meeting, which would be
for the full board, because I think that having a surprise, you know,
right,
coming today, then we're going to skip 2 months.
Excellent point.
And we have two new people, so that would probably help.
We've got two issues that we're looking at here. One we can easily vote on and decide, and that's the date we meet. Since that has been requested, and we've had that as a discussion since November, to look at an alternate meeting date. So if we have a motion, and again, if you think we need more time to digest it, that's fine. And we can put that off till the next meeting as well, whether or not we want to make a decision on Wednesdays of the fourth week of the month, or hold that till next month as well. Either way, those would be the options I'd be looking at, and if there's some more discussion, go for it.
Well, I know Jules wants to be involved, and the sooner we can do a different day of the week, the sooner she can be involved. So,
if there is, well, let Do we have a motion to that effect?
You worded better than anybody.
Okay.
So, I move that any future meetings of the Public Safety Advisory Board in a particular month occur on the fourth Wednesday of that month.
Okay.
I second.
Discussion. And please, new people, if there is a problem, share it. You came in with the premise that the meetings were on Mondays, and all of a sudden you're here and we're changing the day on you. I don't want that to mess you.
Actually, worked better for me.
Okay.
So, yeah.
If there is no further discussion, let's have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Is there any opposition? Okay. So, with that in mind, our next meeting will be on February 26th, Wednesday.
So that's happening.
That okay. It sounds like that would be the case if we didn't have a vote or a motion or anything to change the date. I think that the premise of waiting on making a final choice on that is a reasonable position, and I'm open to discussion on that if anybody has an opinion otherwise. I don't think it's anything that requires a vote unless we have some major opposition. But that can be, as far as a formal decision, can be put on abeyance till next month.
Okay. Are we talking about the decision to permanently move the...
To shift to a quarterly meeting.
Right.
We're going to put that...
The frequency will push to the next
meeting. We have a month to decide.
If and when we leave.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. Okay. Anything else on changes to schedules or concepts or anything else? If not, we'll move to the next topic, which would be... Yes, please, go ahead.
What point of order? Are we going to do the minutes or not?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
That slipped right by because of the agenda change. Let's move back on that. Thank you for our rules of order. What was that, Hoyle? No, I don't know.
Roberts,
thank you. Thank you. Hoyle's the card person.
Right.
we have minutes from our last meeting, November 18th. Mm-hmm. Was that our...
That was the last meeting.
Okay. That's right. Have you had a chance to review, and we need to approve them. If there are changes, please let's change them as necessary. And if there are no changes, those are a motion to...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The last paragraph before there would be no further business. And I may have a poor memory, so if anyone has a better memory, just correct me, please. When it mentions Captain Mahuna stated that the kids were actually working things out and agreed to have lunch together and talk, but parents were still concerned and requested a police presence at the walkout. It seems to indicate that Captain Mahuna had described there being no concerns among the students. But I was left with the impression that there were still concerns among certain students.
Okay, well, first, the no further business is a separate paragraph of no further business for the meeting. I don't know about the paragraph above that, if there was still concerns.
I would suggest that the sentence starting with "he stated that the kids" is superfluous to the minutes of the meeting and be stricken.
What?
It's third line from the bottom.
So you want the last sentence removed? Is that what you'd like,
the whole sentence?
I would suggest that because I don't have, that is not my memory of the discussion. And if I am in error, then I'm willing to admit that. But given that it is superfluous to our meeting,
okay.
I would...
I just had it, took it from my notes of what I heard at the time. So.
Well, the point is it make any difference to our discussion that we had? He's saying it's superfluous. I think the fact that the parents were concerned and request a police presence might be of note. I mean, they spoke with the students. I can see that it doesn't have a mandate to be in there. That's... How would you rephrase it? Rather than say we don't like it, let's correct it.
It's unfortunate that Captain Mahuna isn't here because he was, sharing his observations.
You're saying it's superfluous. How would the last sentence read?
They were on a track to resolution. At least it was. They still had concerns, but the kids were willing to dialogue and I think that's different than the heightened fear.
Then what?
So that I think is might probably be more appropriate. This that if we say he stated that the kids were on a track to working things out, and parents were requested.
Just take out and agreed to have, which yeah, that is.
My concern is that it was certainly a well covered incident, and I don't want to create a public record that speaks to a particular interpretation of a resolution that may or may not have happened.
Okay. Valid point. Any further? So you'd be fine taking out, starting with and agreed, to the end of the comma before but?
I would say you stated that the kids were actually working things out. And noted that parents were still concerned and requested police presence at the walkout.
Okay.
That would jive with my recollection and my...
Does that conflict with anybody else's recollection?
Okay. He stated that the kids were working things out.
I know that we had police at the walkout.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And that...
Parents were still concerned.
Parents were still concerned and requested a police presence. Okay.
Does anyone have a problem with that as a modification? Does it change with your recall of the discussion was to a point that it's unacceptable or problematic?
What the body wants, I write down.
No,
what I'm here,
Chris. I'm not questioning that.
And so,
yeah, the point is that
sometimes I miss things. There's no pride of authorship, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
The group has a final say. So,
and I did not mean that as a critique. I just want to be very careful.
I understand the sensitivity. I understand and appreciate it. So if there's a better way to articulate in a record that is accessible. And
for that reason, that's why I'm saying if you've got it, and you did, what would be an acceptable way of saying it? And that's the whole issue. I don't see a problem with that change, but because it's dealing with how we as members remembered what took place or whether that was the meat of the discussion, whether that's a significant point, that's the final issue. And like I said, is there anyone who has an objection to the change as it is before we seek an approval of the minutes?
No objection here.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
As amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Traditionally, we have had a chair, a vice chair, and a secretary who serves as a recorder of our meetings. until this month, we have been operating with probably half of a full membership most of the last year, probably most of the last 2 years. And as such, we have not really had the resources to draw on for a chair, vice chair, and Chris has volunteered to fill in as our secretary. I have said at the last meeting that I don't have a problem in continuing on chair. If that's something that you're in favor of, we can just make nominations for the various positions. And then once that's done, I think last year we did nominations in January and did a vote to affirm that in our next meeting, which would be February. Yes, Jude?
I suggest that we don't really need a vice president.
I think we should.
But if you want to stay president, let's vote on it now.
I don't know if I could stand the impeachment process. But
oh, we're not going there.
That's why it's chair, vice chair.
Especially
if
a chair.
Okay.
And if for some reason I can't make it, that's the role of the vice chair, which is the position I held and filled for Chuck when he was our chairperson when he had some health and family issues to contend with. So I will throw this open to our group for discussion, nominations, and anything else you would like to do in the next 3 or 4 minutes.
Mr. Chair, if you need a break from the chairmanship, I will be happy to take over, but I don't want to run against the sitting chair.
I don't know if I want to stay here or not, but I will for the moment, at least this meeting. And unfortunately, I don't think I have had to rely on anyone subbing for me in the last year or so. I can't guarantee that with the date change. And my schedule sometimes gets a little weird in the middle of the week. Would you be willing to serve as vice chair and potentially take chairmanship next year? Or if I decide to flake out halfway through the year?
Sure, absolutely.
We have some nominations.
I nominate Mike Salvaggio for vice president, vice chair.
Okay. Sorry. Person in charge of vice.
Person in charge of vice.
Okay, any other nominations? I will not nominate myself.
I nominate Tom as vice chair, sorry.
Tom Friedland.
I don't do well with names either. We need name tags.
If we're on audio, we ought to say full
names.
I've tried to help before in nominating, but they tell me I can't. So.
Okay. You don't want to be our scribe?
Non-voting member. I'm a non-voting member.
Stefan, now that he's got his disguise on.
We'll just lean on you.
Lean on you. All
right. Do we have anybody who is willing to take on the secretarial responsibilities, or are we having an...
By default.
Chris continuing in involuntary servitude. she can always back out.
But I will say my caregiving duties are not as...
Okay.
7 day...
Well, we leave that position vacant and have somebody fill in as an acting for the balance of the time until we can arm twist somebody. Maybe we can get somebody from the youth council again.
Evan was a senior at Westland High School. He was great. Eagle Scout, an amazing kid.
Okay. Any other nominations? Can we have a motion to close the nominations?
I move to close the nominations.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We will have the formal affirmation, I guess, at our February meeting. That gets us down to where we really should be at this point, and not sooner, our disaster preparedness stuff. So
I'll make it fast.
Huh?
I'll make it fast.
Okay.
For the benefit of the new people, I will do a 1 minute. If you're not already familiar with Map Your Neighborhood, I think it's always a good idea to not make assumptions that you already know what it is. it's sort of a misnomer. Mapping neighborhood scares people. They think that Big Brother's going to be mapping your neighborhood. It's a GPS thing. So I don't know what they think. But it's a program that's been around for a while, and it's in, I think, multiple states. I know it's in multiple regions. Wilsonville has one, and Beaverton has one, where neighbors actually get together in a meeting, and one of us, usually me, runs the meeting at their home for 15 to 20 of their contiguous neighbors, so that they can, after the 90-minute meeting, have a game plan for what to do right after a disaster. So that after they've looked after their own household members, they have an agreed-upon meeting place where they all go and they have assigned duties of who's going to check on things like gas leaks and so forth. And it also is a way for people to find out who has what skills in their neighborhood and who has what tools. So we have this all written down in a workbook, and I brought Alicia a whole packet of this information. But there's a workbook that we go through, and my next meeting, whatever it is, we got three in the works right now. It'd be lovely if one of you came to one meeting, one to the other, so you can see what it is. But we go through a workbook and go through mapping out who lives where, if there's like children that might be alone for a half hour during the day or something, that somebody's going to watch out for them. The tools to have under your bed in case, you know, everything breaks loose and falling glass happens, you've got your sturdy shoes and your hard hat and so forth. The gathering site, a care center. We have in my neighborhood, we have three people in wheelchairs, and they have spouses that are often home, but if they aren't and it's 14 degrees out, they have, the police will be able to come into, if they have their address and their names, and pick them up and take them to a place that has heat and so forth. Unless that's changed. The police department told me that 3 years ago.
You can do whatever you want.
Okay. Yeah. And then we go through the skills, knowledge, equipment, knowledge, and all that. find out who lives where. And this information is private. We're very careful about not sharing who's at what household number and who has how many children and that kind of thing. It's very private information just for the neighborhood, unless they want the officers to pick them up, and then we have to give their information with their permission. So we go through this. I had 6 years in disaster restoration, so I've got a lot of personal experience of seeing this. Chris and I have both been in horrible disasters and survived, and we know what it takes to prepare and what you need in the way of, you know, food and water and first aid kits and all that. So when we finished with this, we've given them all this information, including the 12 Valley Fire and Rescue, prepare yourself before and after disaster, the equipment and supplies you might need. We have a wonderful booklet from the Red Cross that is very comprehensive. I highly recommend people get their hands on this, called Prepare. And Living on Shaky Ground is How to Survive Earthquakes and Tsunamis in Oregon. And Your Community's Recovery Time, zip code 97068. This is from an aftershock project from OPB and Oregon State Seismology Department on how long we may be without utilities after a 9.0 earthquake, and our water supply could be out for a year. So it's like these are things to kind of take seriously. Listing of important legal documents you might want to have in your little fire safe. If you don't have one, everybody should have a little fire safe that you can put your documents and cash and important things in. An emergency preparedness kit checklist from Clackamas Fire District, which is quite old but still very valid. Storing water in plastic bottles, things like this that help people go, oh my gosh, I don't know where to start. And this meeting is for them, it's a way for them to start. And if they haven't started putting their supplies together, suggestions of what you can do weekly or monthly or whatever you can afford to get your kit together. And then at the end of this, they ask a million questions, and we go through things like, how do you deal with bathroom facilities if you don't have running water for 6 months? And creative things like that that people don't really want to talk about, they kind of have to think about. So we do this in their homes, like I said, 15 to 20 families at a time. And at the end of this, they feel like they not only have met some of their neighbors and know them a little better, but they've got a game plan of how to go out and deal with an emergency and keep this little workbook under their bed with their hard hat. Flashlight, everything. So can you pass this down for Alicia?
It's really to make the neighbors self-sufficient in the event of a disaster. And our concentration has been on that as opposed to the CERT concept where you'd be going out and, you know, finding people, but they're still going to have to function and survive. The concept has been more to make communities stable to survive the disaster rather than not have the resources that would be necessary in the event of a challenge, whether it be a snowstorm or an earthquake.
Or fire. And the first responders are going to be overwhelmed. They can't come to your neighborhood. People always say, well, give me a list of emergency numbers at City Hall. And I said, no. You can call 911 if you can get through, but you really need to be able to take care of yourselves and watch out for each other. And there's all sorts of factors in there. People that don't want to do it, you know, maybe somebody that lives alone, they're 90 years old, and they go, I'll just go to my neighbor if I need help. Well, your neighbor may not have food for you, you know, that kind of thing. And I did look at Jules' pointer to, we've been very concerned about assisted living in retirement homes of what are they going to do? You live in a 400 square foot place and you're reliant on all these people for giving you your medications and your food. And so I looked at the state legislation and I didn't read the 144 page document, I read 5 pages. And it states that they are required to do these things. I mean, I know Alicia knows all this, but a lot of them don't. My mother lived in one and I asked the manager. And she said, well, I guess when we run out of food in the kitchen, that's it. And it's like, you don't have a plan for emergency? No, not really.
No, they probably have something in writing.
Well, yeah. I thought it was probably illegal, and it was a very well-run place, but it really kind of freaked me out. So I read Jewel's document that she forwarded, and yeah, they do have very specific requirements of what they have to do to meet state requirements to have all this. So we were worried about school children during the day, elderly people in retirement places that can't stockpile things in their garage like we can. So it sounds like some of these things are getting answered and the schools are getting more on board with this. So we're all working together to try to
actually, I think it was William that forwarded that to us and not Jules. She just commented on it. You were the driving force.
So
I want to give credit where credit is due.
I'm sorry.
You guys, so at our joint meeting, some information came before the City Council. And I work with the Regional Health Preparedness Organization and the Multi-Agency Coordination Group to provide medical care for the community in the event of crises. And I just wanted to address the board with the concept in mind that, you know, it's the whole community concept with an understanding that we set our priorities based on the population base that's most vulnerable. And in most instances, that's either going to be the very young or the elderly or those that need assisted living. So they're already in need of medical supplies and certain type of medical care from nursing staff in order to survive on a daily basis. And so I was going to ask the board to consider taking a look at the references that I've forwarded regarding the Oregon administrative rules for aging populations and people with disabilities. And specific to Chapter 411, Division 54, under the Residential Care and Assisted Living Facilities criteria, there's a subsection dealing with emergency and disaster planning. It does, in here, incorporate language regarding the authority having jurisdiction and the Oregon Fire Code, which would then also involve Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, which is, I believe, our AHJ. So there are very specific requirements, not only for fire drills and exercises, but also what kind of supplies, what kind of plans, and what kind of exercises the occupants in these facilities have to know in order to have this license to operate that kind of facility. And I realize that our emergency planning process is still underway. I see in the meeting minute notes here that the Captain Mahuna reported in November that the city is still working to decide whether to hire an emergency operation manager or add those duties to existing staff. I specifically asked the previous city manager about that and asked if there was funding for us to hire at least on a part-time basis an emergency preparedness manager to help facilitate the emergency preparedness plan, and she indicated there was not funding for us to be able to do that, and that in fact they were going to continue to delegate that responsibility to the Westland Police Department. And I realized that they have limited capacity to be able to handle those things, and so hence my interest. So I am a bit of an emergency preparedness planning expert. did find this information. I want to leave it with you guys so that I'll pass it down to the chair so that perhaps everybody on the board can review it and then formulate your opinion as to what it is that the council should do to perhaps incorporate that information by reference into our city emergency plan, so that way our fire department, our police department, our code enforcement officer, and the state department responsible for licensing those facilities are all working together to make sure that our adult citizens are safe.
That's great, because falling through the cracks isn't an option when you're alone and scared. That's fantastic, because we really all need to work together. I mean, there's disparate groups that are all doing wonderful things, but sometimes it's not like gelling of, like, well, and like you said, if there isn't a budget for something, what do you do? And, you know.
Right. Maybe we can, between now and our next meeting, since this just came to us, was it today or over the weekend, I don't remember which, but it starts, I think, mainly around page 88 or 90 that deals with the concerns, and if there's perhaps some ideas in how that can be incorporated into the city disaster plan, let's revisit that next meeting. Chris?
Well, there's always that question of jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Having been one who went out and monitored on behalf of the federal government, that I was, you know, representing the state, it was, you know, it fell to us to monitor compliance. Here, it seems like more in this, it goes to counties that oftentimes do the monitoring. My question is always, you know, okay, now we see what they must do, but now who has the checklist to say, yep, they've done it, yep, they've done it? Who's responsible for that compliance checklist?
Yeah, and so I don't have the answer to that question. We could reach out to the Department of Human Resources and ask them, as part of their licensing requirement, are they on an annual basis actually checking to make sure that these emergency plans and disaster drills are being conducted? If the facility is taking Medicare or Medicaid dollars in, it's typically a federal program, mm-hmm. and that would fall under the Center for CMS,
yes.
Center for Medicare and Medicaid, mm-hmm. which could potentially trigger the Joint Commission. And the Joint Commission is the authority that they typically sub-license to, who goes out and does the auditing on behalf of CMS. So they may give us that as the answer. But I haven't actually tracked this that far to be able to give you.
I think the idea should be just more an idea of putting in the concept that needs to be something in the management plan, and maybe it is something that eventually gets incorporated into licensing or something like that. We're not looking at solving the prices. We're not looking at enforcing it. Merely, can something be put in the plan that triggers an inquiry on that? And so that would be the idea between now and next meeting.
And awareness. So I would hate to just impose all of a sudden something on an assisted living facility that operates on a budget.
Right.
But we still should be expecting these facilities to operate according to the laws that are licensing their facility to operate. And so I think we need to at least put them on notice somehow that, you know, perhaps as part of our Mapper Neighborhood program or just a gentle outreach, hey folks, you know, we noted this, what's happening in your facility, how can we help you? Something along those lines, I think, could be facilitated if, in fact, you choose to adopt this language into the emergency plan.
Okay. Social media has been an ongoing topic, especially with disaster preparedness and how best to use that as an outreach tool. That's one of the problems we've had in terms of conveying information through the city's systems. And I freely admit that I am social media ignorant. And so if I will let Judy discuss any issues she's got regarding disaster preparedness and social media.
Of course, we've talked about it before. And Mike is far more sophisticated than I am about this. I chose not to be on social media after 25 years in the computer industry. It's like, I don't do social media, so I don't know how to do this stuff. So he's grateful, has graciously agreed to help formulate a a way of getting information out there, and anything that you guys and Alicia can give us, any ideas of how to get to people. I've designed a very simple thing. I've gotten permission from the person at the library in charge of putting things on the bulletin board that catches your attention when you walk into the library. I haven't put it up yet, but just so many people see that as they walk in, and that might spark them to contact Westland. Westlandready at Gmail, by the way, is how you reach Chris and me to set up meetings. So if you want to give that out to anybody, it comes right on my phone right away. I'm happy to call them back and set up a meeting. But Mike was talking about ways of getting this information out there, so why don't you talk about this?
So I did reach out to Councillor Walters about this, and there are some concerns, obviously, about having a official city entity putting out information without going through the usual city channels. And so that's why we haven't had anything set up at this point in time. I'd like to work with the city staff to make sure that there's some kind of process whereby we do have that kind of flexibility. In the past, I've worked with certain cities, particularly Milwaukee, where we were going to put stuff out. That was an official message from the city, but an account on either social media or a website or whatever that was not controlled directly by city staff. What we do is we had a process where we would kind of filter a message through the city staff and get that approved. And then once it had that kind of seal of approval on it, then it would be posted on social media. There's also a lot of things to work out regarding retention of messages, because if someone sends a Facebook message to the Facebook group, does that become a public record? I think it does. And so we have to have those questions answered before we begin putting stuff out. Having said that, I think that there is a great opportunity to begin pushing out more of this message through social media. I think that there's a lot of young families in town that are using that. Now there's a lot of, obviously there's a lot of teenagers and school-aged kids that might be interested in knowing that there is a defensive driving course where you get to, wear a helmet and, skid out of BMW, and then your parents might like to know that they can actually save money on their car insurance if you're doing that. And with the targeting tools that social media makes available, we can actually say we're going to target this message specifically to the groups that we think are going to be most into it. And so the same thing with the Map Your Neighborhood. We can, I'm guessing that a 16-year-old who lives forever is not going to be interested in emergency prep, but we might have a way to target the middle-aged families, people that are in assisted living facilities, that sort of thing. People that may need a little bit extra help. And so by using that social media targeting as leverage, I think we can get a lot of these messages that we're talking about here pushed out in a much more efficient manner. And I didn't bring this up with Councillor Walters, but I'd love if there was some kind of a booster fund that we could donate a few bucks into, not necessarily we here, but just to give some boosts to those ads when we need to really put some fire behind it.
Where do we sit with the city on some of these things that fall under your venue more than anything?
We try and push messages out as they come to us. So we have put Map Your Neighborhood out a couple times on our social media. Just today we put the defensive driving course out on our social media as well. We've got the city newsletter. So we're happy to push that out on our platform. It's just we don't do any targeted ads, so we wouldn't be able to do that. But as far as who you're trying to target, it all depends on what social media you're using. Like your 16-year-olds you're talking about, they're more on Instagram, less on Facebook. So if you're trying to target families and that kind of stuff, you'd put your message out on a Facebook and a Nextdoor as opposed to Snapchat, Twitter, that kind of stuff.
And there's even tools out there that are aggregators where you can put your ads out through one platform and it will take demographics from each of those outlets, and it'll find the older people on Instagram, it'll find the younger people on Facebook, so it's kind of neat that way.
But what about people that aren't on social media, or not that?
I don't believe they exist.
Right.
I work for a company that markets to specifically people like our age and my age and older. And most people, a lot of those people are driven to the web by direct mail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just wondering about like a postcard that says, you know, hey, come on to the website and,
yep.
and put in your email and we'll send you email updates or something like that.
Absolutely.
Do we already have something like that?
I don't think that we have something direct mail in. Do we have the ability on the city website, though, to collect people's information and say, hey, I'm this person, I live here, I'm interested in more information? Or
well, it can also be a blanketed mailing, like just like everybody in the neighborhood gets a...
But it'll direct them to some action.
Yeah. Right, you could say something like...
Sometimes it's better done through the water bills.
Yeah, we have to have promotions for Map Your Neighborhood in the water.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but how many people actually get them paper bills anymore?
That's...
As it stands, it's actually relatively easy to pull a curated list of households that, again, are targeted by demographics. And I think Weston probably has 20,000 households.
27.
Okay. And so if you assume that you're going to want to say, let's say for teen driving, we're going to send something to the households that have kids of age that they might be in school, they might be anywhere from kind of 15 to 18. We can pull that list and get some card printed up and send it out.
Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of like overall messaging, like something like, hey, you guys know we have these messages and they come up on the neighborhood site and come up on this, and that if you're not on them, here's a great way to get onto that.
To my knowledge, what you're wanting to do, I think you would have to go through the county to get that specific type of demographic stuff. But at least when I do it with the neighborhood association, it's just addresses. I don't have like specific targeted.
I got it.
Yeah.
Is there any budget for sending postcards out from your standpoint?
Not that I know of for advisory groups. I can definitely look into that, but I haven't done anything in the year that I've been here for advisory groups, just for neighborhoods.
Okay.
I think the most important message I want to get to people, which is sometimes confusing to the public, is that Map Your Neighborhood is something that we volunteers with the city do for them. They don't have to do it themselves. Because people, Alicia and I were talking on phone today about this, that people are scared to death sometimes of getting up in front of their neighbors and doing presentations. I mean, I'm not a fan my whole life, but that's something that if we say, we come out and do it for you, we give you the materials, we get a game plan for you, and all you have to do is meet your neighbors and talk about it. And then they go, oh, well, I can do that. That's easier. I thought this was going to be like, oh, my God, what do we do now? So that message, getting at however we can get that out there.
Do you guys already use the city newsletter that goes out with the utility billing?
Yes.
Yeah, we've had
some things in there. Anything else in terms of that area? Because some of that dovetails with promoting our teen driving program, and given the fact we're getting...
I was just going to share one quick thing.
Sure.
I remember former board member David and I worked on a calendar for social media that essentially, I think we targeted September during Emergency Preparedness Month, and basically gave the city, here's a bunch of messages with links to information and things that you can post. So
yeah,
that
so
might
I,
be something that
I did do that this past September on our social media. There was like a week by week thing of what you should be preparing for
awesome.
In the month of September. So yeah, we did do that this year.
Okay.
And the fair is a great place.
Huh?
The fair.
Oh, okay.
There's all kinds of kids with families. We get some pamphlets out in the fairs at the booth.
Chris and I have talked about this a million times. We're a little confused about why Lake Oswego's fairs draw so many more people than ours do. I mean, have you ever been to them? They're just packed with people, and ours are like moderately attended.
It's for West Lynn.
Of course, they have Prep LO that is pushed by some of the vendors, but we need to have an emergency fair because we haven't had one in 2 years.
Well, I think you were talking about the old time fair.
Old time fair.
Oh, we tried that and it was.
But he's saying the police department had
police
a lot of information on it.
Right.
So.
It wasn't helpful for us to do our part there. We tried that.
We were overshadowed by the wheel.
You guys had too much fun.
You were over.
We may be here all night.
You guys tried our booth, is that what you're saying?
We shared.
We shared.
It didn't work out?
We just didn't get any interest whatsoever. But everybody loved coming to the booth and spending your wheel of prizes.
Yeah,
but,
you know, the wheel really
we felt invisible.
Yeah, but you
okay.
No, it just wasn't. The old time fair wasn't a good use of our time, nor was the music in the park. But if we get the word out about an emergency fair, that would be awesome if we could get high attendance there. Because they love the police car, and they love the kids love that. They love seeing the fire trucks and the mouthless CPR dummies and all that stuff. They love that. We just need to get the word out that we can do this and get vendors to come and
let them plan your ladder, your big ladder.
There's some liability in that.
Okay.
Well, we can work with Alicia and fire and everybody later on this.
It's all in a matter of promotion. For our new people, the board a couple of years ago decided we needed to do something regarding teen driver safety, because there had been several accidents involving Westland High School students that either had a major accident or a fatality, and there had been some programs done on campus. But a couple of years ago, we got behind a program that comes to Portland twice a year. It's called Street Survival. It's put on by the BMW Club of America. They have a chapter in Oregon. It's the Sports Car Club of America that for the Oregon chapter, they are 503C1 or whatever the nonprofit designation is. They put on a one-day class, which the student goes out, he has half the day in the classroom, half the day behind the wheel in the car that he normally would be driving. The students have to have at least a permit or a license. They'd like them to have at least 6 months of behind the wheel driving. And they put them through their paces in doing collision avoidance, making high-speed stops and maneuvering the vehicle as if they suddenly had a red light in front of them or somebody broke down in front of them, put them on skid pan so that they're forced to lose control of the car and correct it. And for some participants, the families can get a discount on their insurance premium, not all of them. The program costs $95 per student, and we have been trying to put about 3 students per class, getting a scholarship for them to attend the class, the idea kind of being that they'll talk about it to their friends and maybe get some motivation so that everybody starts talking about teen driver safety. The next class is in the middle of March. I think it's the 15th or 16th, whatever that Sunday is. We have a promotion going on right now. The students are being notified through the school's distribution notification system. You said you put something out in the social media earlier this week or today. They have to do a very short essay that says how they could help teen drivers become better participants in the city. It's mainly just that they have to do something in order to qualify, and we will make a selection of 3 that we will in turn pay out of a fund that we had created that's being held by the BMW Club. Donated from an anonymous source. We have about $1,000 in there at the moment. And we're right now in that selection process. We opened it up the first of the year, and we're not getting a whole lot of response at the moment. They're putting it out in the school system again this week, and hopefully your social media will generate something on that as well. And that's where we stand on it. It's been a challenge to promote it because we have to do something that entices the teen driver, who in turn has to have the parent involved in order to attend the class. And so it's 2 different populations that have to be notified that we want to come together in order to do it. And that's where we are at this point.
And all the kids who have taken it have said it dramatically increased their self-confidence behind the wheel.
And for those that are new people, if you haven't seen it, if you go on to YouTube, type in teen driver safety and COIN TV, COIN did about a 2-minute spot on it. I think it was in 2016. It might have been more recent than that. That gives a very quick synopsis of it. Street Survival also has a couple of informational videos that you can find on YouTube. There are a couple that get into the 5 or 6 minute range that probably if they sat through all of it, they might find it interesting, but they'd be bored to tears. They have an attention span, you know, like a goldfish. But you do need something, and they do have a blast with it. The students, you know, they're a little resistive when they first start. My daughter was the best example. Why do I have to do this? And by the time she was done, she wanted to go back, and she's done it 2 additional times. And the difference in her driving from the time when she first took it to driving home that evening was phenomenal, and it built her confidence enough that she had no trouble doing the behind-the-wheel test at DMV.
Can I just clarify one thing? I'm sorry. Is the attendance to the class bins not...
No, they sell out.
Okay.
So they usually have about 30-some-odd seats. They hold whatever we tell them we want. I think we've requested 4 for this cycle. There's one that's a holdover from the fall that was unable to meet that criteria, so we just rolled them over into this one. But they will sell out. But it's the challenge to get the students to react to it. They have to, you know, our parameters are they have to be a Westland resident. They don't have to be going to Westland High. We've tried to make it available to the information beyond the high school to those that might be going to Art Tech or Jesuit or any of the other, you know, private high schools where they might live in Westland, but you know they're free to apply for it as long as they're a resident of Westland and meet the other criteria. Yes.
Have you guys thought about making like a short video of people who have taken the class before? You could push out, or that we could push out on social media, or the police could push out on social media. I just feel like a teen would be more likely to sign up for something if they see their peers talking about it, as opposed to some news article or information video.
It's a good idea.
Or their peer going through it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the drawback in getting those that have gone through it is that most of them go to it when they're seniors, and Evan is an example who was youth advisory liaison to our group, went through it, and now he's back east at school. So
even just like sending a representative to the class, just getting it right afterwards, like, hey, I just took this driving class, and it was great, here's why you should sign up for it.
We might in the interim see if COIN would give us permission to show their little clip from a couple of years ago, at least until we can do something on our own.
Is there a videographer that's joined our
I mean, you don't even have to do anything fancy. You could just do...
You have a kid's film.
Yeah.
Somebody who's at least familiar with doing, you know, semi-professional shots would be best. Do we have some place where something like that could be linked? Obviously, I would assume to our application webpage would be something like that.
Yeah, definitely on the application webpage, and then when we're pushing the message out from people signing up for it, that could be something that we could put, instead of just like a stock image of a kid driving a car, here's a video of somebody who's actually taken it and why you should sign up for it.
Are you familiar with any procedure getting permission from a news agency on that? That would be something I'd be scrambling from scratch on if you know. Or is there somebody in the city that has a background in that could, and maybe not. I mean, I could, you know, certainly start from ground zero, but if somebody already knows what to do.
No, so my background is actually media, so I would be more than happy to reach out to them.
Okay.
You're right, their teens are going to look at other teens and listen to them. Not old
I'll see if I can find the specific link.
I think it's on the page.
Okay.
On the application page. I think that's okay. There.
Well, check and see, but let me know if you need anything else on it. But I thought the one from COIN was pretty concise and complete. Any other questions about the teen driver safety? I think that would be something, both the Map Your Neighborhood or Disaster Preparedness and Teen Driver Safing, that would be something we would create as subcommittees in our reformation of the group.
And by the way, that class in March is, I think, the week before spring break.
Okay.
I checked spring break dates, which is the 22nd, I think.
Is the application on the city website for that?
It is on. It's on the city website. I'm not sure how to get to it.
It's on the police page.
It's on which page?
The police page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know I looked at it. I don't remember how I got there.
Awesome.
Any other old business? Chris?
Well, I don't know if that... Maybe that's on the
next. Throw it out.
Well, I mean, just as far as... I don't know, but... And this is following up on Mark's... kind
social
of
media.
Concerns. No. This is, his looking at the initiative, the FireWise initiative... as a project for PSAB, and whether it sort of fit under disaster, it doesn't quite fit under MYN because it's a little different, it's a different approach, but he really wanted to see us move forward with that, and it's something that interests me a great deal as well. So where that sort of...
Very briefly, can you synopsis what it is?
Take it away.
In
well,
2 minutes.
So Mark and I talked a little bit afterwards.
I mean, it would be a little more of a hybrid of the formal one, right, that he was envisioning?
So the FireWise program that's put on by the NFPA, so National Fire Protection Agency, they put on a program that supports communities in becoming more FireWise and more fire aware of reducing fuels in their area and things that they can do mostly on their own home to create defensible space. So when I talk to Mark, it really is about the community. So a lot of the neighborhood associations, for instance, two of which have already become FireWise, others that are considering it, and I've shared information with them and their presidents. So I was letting them know, I don't know FireWise if that's a good fit necessarily for a committee as it is for a community that comes around a neighborhood association or has some sort of boundary and association.
Was that something you could serve, do something as a liaison to the
neighborhood
association?
Well, that was, as Mark and I were talking about it, as far as, well, what role PSAB would have, and that would be to track what neighborhood associations have gotten on board, just as we track where have those Map Your Neighborhood meetings come to see whether we have coverage. We know where these, green belts are, these public spaces that sometimes there's it's your job to clean it. No, it's their job to clean it. Whose job to keep it, the fuels under control. And so that would be sort of ours. It would be, our role would be monitoring and looking to see, well, maybe they need to be spoken to about some opportunities here in order to make this part of our overall community a little safer. That was the approach or the role that we saw.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense. So
okay.
A lot of the times with FireWise, you're focused on your own home, your own property.
Exactly.
The discussion you're having about is property that's owned by the city or other entities outside of a private owner.
Or it may be a community, their home is abutting that property.
So that conversation happened with the city, so because the city has to take on that discussion, in which we brought the county and then also Oregon Department of Forestry to that conversation. They've had a preliminary meeting, of which I think was actually reported in the Westland Tidings, and now we're waiting for subsequent meetings to be scheduled and happen. I think Ken with the Parks Department has been the one that's point on it.
So that,
and there's a little bit of a hiccup, obviously, and a change of leadership.
At least the concept or the idea of something on a community level is being discussed or attempted to be implemented.
Yeah,
much like what Chris is talking about.
The hope is to have a larger fuel mitigation plan for what does that look like for the city, of which we have, obviously an interest in fire suppression, but has a lot of different considerations when you think of wildlife, riparian areas, and things that could be impacted by mitigating
Maybe it's premature as a subcommittee at this point, but maybe you and Mark can experiment a little bit on touching base with some of the neighborhood associations, at least seeing if they're aware of it. I don't know. But we might look at that as a subcommittee when we reformat.
Yeah. I was follow on to that. Have you ever spoken to the neighborhood association presidents as a group, because I know they get together regularly, about this issue?
So I've spoken to a number of presidents or neighborhood associations, and then I can't remember if it was their last president's meeting I went to, but I've gone to that one regularly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. When I do all my fuel, I'm storing up for my generator, when we lose all our power when we get hit by the big one. How's that going to help with our fire thing?
Different kind of fuel.
Different explosion.
Different kind of fuel. I like that. Okay. All right.
Okay. Only thing we have under new business at this point, and I don't think we have time to go into much depth on it right now, is ideas for discussions or presentations to the group in our subsequent meetings. We have had in the past informational presentations that are germane to our particular area of interest in public safety. We had previously had the incident command presentation that was done for the city council, done for our group about 6 months before that. We've had some information on FirstNet, the revised new public safety communication system that is just now coming into being, that would allow priority communications for public safety entities. These are some of the things we've done in the past. Topics of interest to the group itself. If you've got ideas, we'll see if we can find a presenter. And so what I usually do is throw it out at the end of the meeting to let you think about it and bring your ideas back at the next one, or shoot me an email, or anything else that might help us bring together some more information to give us better insight as to what we're doing.
Question?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's more appropriate under your report, but I was just curious. There's usually a year-end report where, you know, things are broken down into the types of calls. And, you know, I just wondered if how long before there is any kind of a summary report. I've always found those helpful when I've worked with other communities, you know, to check reality versus perception.
Maybe they don't want you to know this year.
Pardon?
Maybe they don't want you to know this year. Maybe it's horrible. Well, maybe West Lynn wouldn't have the damage that it normally has.
I know, and that's just it. You know, I like it. You, sometimes you see a next door, you know, that, oh my God, the cars are constantly broken into.
Yeah.
Are they really broken into, or did somebody easily open a door and
nobody locks the doors?
Yeah, you know.
A lot of them are leaving them unlocked.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You know, I mean, are there real break-ins? You know, is it up? Is it down? Is it
you want me about to wait
the same?
Until I get
you know, and that type of thing. No, I mean, don't have to. I'm looking at it as a potential topic.
Is there a year-end stat?
Is there a status report?
Okay. I'll find out, and I'm sure there is. It's probably just, it's still January, so you know how it works.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I'll make sure that
somebody has to put it together.
Have it here for the 26th meeting?
Like March or something like that. Well, it might even be too soon for that to come out.
A future meeting.
Yeah,
a future meeting. It would be nice, and it would be nice if if it's still formatted in a similar way, just compare it one year to the next, so you can see if there's anything really trending or not.
This is something I brought up at the end of last year, and I think this is going to be queued up for February, but maybe the end of this year, is with the legislature having passed Senate Bill 507, which flipped the presumption for post-traumatic stress injuries for first responders. I'm very interested to know, in terms of officer and first responder wellness, if that's being taken advantage of in a positive way in our respective agencies. So be interesting to see how the first year of deployment affects those kinds of claims.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've had any for us.
Yeah, I haven't seen any claims
right
previous, but I think the best parallel to that would be the cancer presumption study.
But
so
you have it.
Right. These guys.
Correct. So we're really excited to see that it's crossing over because it's proven that there's PTSD that happens within emergency responders. And then specifically that it's being more identified not necessarily as a disease but an injury and being treated as such. So specific to fire, we have a cancer presumption that essentially says if we are to contract cancer within our time due to level exposures to carcinogens that we know through extensive studies happens, that then that is covered essentially as a workplace injury.
Even if you can't resolve it to a specific fire, just like with PTSD or PTSI, you now no longer have to link that to a specific incident.
Yeah.
Well, there are certain.
What about us? So you guys always get everything.
We have drug labs.
You're supposed to have it.
PTSI thing too.
We have drug labs.
Yeah.
We get cancer too from drug labs.
Yeah.
Do not want to swim.
Well,
pushing a little bit.
Well, get down to sail.
Usually cardiovascular is except for most public safety.
It is.
So,
yes, cardiovascular is. So that's
maybe it's something the captain has more info on than you do, and we'll have to find out a little bit more next month, I would suspect. As long as you are talking.
Claims, yeah. Just to answer your question, I'm not aware of any claims, yeah.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting to see if those happen.
That number ticks at all by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anything from the police department as far as an update?
You know, I love to talk.
Briefly. My goal usually is a 60-minute...
You guys got to talk all you
want. My goal is a 60-minute meeting, and we've already gone over that. So
while you guys were talking, I was just thinking that when I came here, we didn't have an assistant city manager. So I might be talking out of the guy in my place. So I don't know if we're going to continue on with assistant city manager or just a city manager. But maybe that's maybe where the money for the emergency preparedness manager could come from. Because if they don't refill that assistant city manager thing, maybe they can pick up some extra money there. Maybe pay some money. That's a thought. That's all.
Ex party contact.
So I push, you know, we were talking about vulnerable kids. Churches are vulnerable. We have all these mass shootings and things happening throughout the United States, churches, schools. So we're focusing on our vulnerable kids, obviously. We're patrol during school, whenever school's in session, when we have sporting events, things like that, we want patrol cars rolling through these parking lots outside them. So every day we're trying to do that. Churches on Sundays, whenever there's any church gathering, we're trying to roll cars through the lots around the buildings, things like that. We have a partnership with the Lutheran Church over on Jolly Point. We have a rest stop set up there. I think some of you are aware of that. We can go there and use their facilities and hang out and do our reports. They meet us in a little room. It's beautiful. They have a refrigerator there for us. The firefighters are going to take some of us on too and let us go to their fire stations and hang out, do reports, and be somewhere where we don't have to worry about being attacked. In some public venue or
you
something
really
like
trust
that.
These guys?
We actually trust the firefighters. We love these firefighters. They treat us very well. So, believe it or not, it wasn't like that in Portland for some reason. We always had this riff back and forth. But here it's different. So, we have our 7-foot Officer Good. You guys have all seen him. He's 7 feet tall. He required his own vehicle. So the supervisors finally got their new vehicle because we've been putting all the new cars with the officers. We finally got our new truck. Well, he couldn't drive anything else. He didn't fit into the Charger. He didn't fit into the Ford Explorer. So,
That's the guy in the truck?
Yeah.
That's going around?
So, yeah. So I fit in this truck really good. It's perfect for me. So now we lost that truck. So he gets to drive that truck around. So whenever you see the truck, there's going to be a 7-foot guy that gets out of it. Super nice guy. He's doing really well. He's still on probation. Just got off of FTAP, which is our training.
So is he training in the truck too?
He's all by himself now.
But no, but when he's in training.
Yes, he was in training in the truck also.
Okay.
We have 2 female officers now. Both of them are awesome. They're doing very well. One is still actually just coming off probation. And the other one's been here for a couple of years. She's doing really well. We have one in the hiring process right now that will probably get hired in February. And we have another guy that I think he's from Australia, but he lives like in Phoenix now. and he's also in the hiring process. We'll probably get hired in February also. So that'll think just put us like two under our maximum staffing. We got two detectives now. We didn't have any detectives probably last time I was here. We had zero detectives because we didn't have the staffing to have detectives anymore. We now have two detectives as of like 2 months ago or a month ago. We finally got two more. We have the one motor officer, Garrett Hoffman. I don't know if you've seen him out and about. We try to have him out about as much as we can. He's also our DRE, our drug recognition expert, and he got all the craft team training, so he goes out on all the major fatality calls, the assault injury crashes.
So in Clackamas County. He came and presented on that.
Yeah.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay,
that
cool.
was really good. Interesting.
So he's awesome. He gives us that connection with the other agencies. You know, they get to use him, but we also get to use their services when we have something major that happens within the city of Westland. So their craft whole team comes Duff's and helps us when we need things. And he goes and helps them on whatever they need. And he's been a great asset in that Milwaukee highway worker. It was hit in the highway work zone just about a week ago. He went out and did a drug evaluation on that driver. And then on his fatality with Malala PD on the police pursuit, he went out and helped out with that also. Then we have our new sergeant from Oregon City that we got, who's awesome, Bill Garland. I don't know if you guys have met him yet, but he's a 10, and we're lucky to get him. Have you met him?
I haven't met him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's on that Clackamas County. He's on that SWAT team with multiple agencies. He's like one of the team leaders. He's a really good dude, very officer safety conscious, and he's a very good leader for here for all the young people that we have because, 85% of us are like under 5 years. So we have a lot of young people. And we're losing our evidence technician. Sarah's leaving. Sarah's awesome. I don't know if anybody's met Sarah, but she processes all our evidence, property, things like that. She is relocating to Seattle, unfortunately, but she's been great. So we have to replace her. We got Jabril Johnson from OSU, who was a linebacker there. He's a 10. We got really lucky on some of the people we hired here.
He's always cold.
He's always cold. He's always wearing a stocking hat, but he's a great guy. He's a great fit. People in Westland seem to love him. And David Baker was driving by and saw all of us sitting there. Texted me, said, "Say hi to everybody." So,
okay.
Chief's doing great. Two captains doing great. Leadership here is really good right now compared to other places I've been. It's doing really well. It's positive.
Housekeeping, is it you or you that are going to tell? Is going to tell Tony about our change of date so that she can reserve this?
We both can, but I will.
I just want to make sure somebody tells her so that this room is reserved for us.
Yep, I'll do that, and I'll check on the year-end reports, and then if there's any discrepancies with that date on the 26th of
every
month, she'll let you know. You know how Tony is.
Yep. Thank you. Well, I don't suppose you have porch pirate as a category.
Oh.
Because that's what they talk about, you know. That's what the buzz is.
The other thing for social media is,
go ahead.
Talking about car break-ins. So a lot of them are just cars left unlocked. Mm-hmm. Left my car unlocked, my laptop was in. Left my car unlocked, my wallet was in. My purse was in. We had some smash and grabs at like the Montessori school, some of the elementary schools, where there's actually people waiting there. They see like a mom get out, go in, get her kid, no purse. They go break the window out, grab the purse real fast, and then 20 minutes or across the river at Safeway using debit cards, credit cards, and whatever else. So if we can get it out to everybody, friends, family, whatever, don't leave anything in the car. Even if it's an empty bag, they'll still break a window out to get it. But a lot of the stuff, a majority of it, is unlocked cars and just leaving things in it, in the cars.
Especially since you have to take your own bags to the market now.
Right. 5 cents.
Okay.
The thing is, I save my bags, take them back to the market, so I pay 5 cents, and I always forget them.
Stefan, you got anything from TVFNR?
You got to pay your 5 cents wrong.
I'll try to be brief. I actually forgot that on our last meeting, that was kind of a cool one to share with you, is a bit of a story. You can read about it in the Westland Tidings from a while back, but there was a recent Westland graduate that was working out at the local club. Unfortunately, he suffered a cardiac arrest. We responded, Tualatin PD responded as it was a club sport, now Bay Club, Lake Oswego, and other agencies. Officers performed CPR, bystander performed CPR, and the 18-year-old at the time luckily survived. So again, he was a Westland resident that now is down at Oregon State University studying mechanical engineering, and I got to help with the reunion of him, our firefighters. the police officers, the bystander, and then his family all came together. And so that's a special moment and a good reminder of how important knowing hands-only CPR can be, because that's what this gentleman knew, and he's able to provide immediately. And the young gentleman has no deficits at all, which is also really important. So that was just a good reminder of the whole system that's out there that leads to the survival of one of our own community members. Station 39, which is on McEwen Road off of Boone's Ferry, just came online this week. Oh. So actually, I'm sorry, last week they had started. So that is a new station, much like you had Station 55 open recently, that helps strengthen our system and response in the area, so that if we have a fire, for instance, we can move units around, and that's one more that we can utilize. They're doing a different staffing pattern than you might see here. It's actually, they're in a squad unit, which has the ALS capabilities, advanced life safety, but also some firefighting capabilities, and it looks like a long, an elongated kind of stocky truck, F-350, if you will, with a much larger apparatus on the back. A little bit more nimble, staffed with two firefighter paramedics, and can get out pretty quickly. But that allows us to address most of the need that's in that specific area, which is medical. So that's a new one that's online.
So is that the only apparatus that'll be there, or is that...
For now it is, yeah. Okay. But we built it so that it has flexibility. So it can actually house up to our largest unit, one of our tiller-drawn apparatus. But that's just kind of gives us flexibility in the future if we decide to redeploy. But that's based on the data of what's required. So right now it says medical is what's needed in that area, and that's what we've staffed it with. The other one is these. We get some bright green radios now. And so you may have remembered a while back voting for a bond that was both in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington County, a communications bond. Most of the technology at our county 911 systems and around was about on line with your brick cell phone from the 90s. And so this is a very much an upgrade. These now have GPS location, much longer battery life. More importantly, they're tri-band, which allows us to talk to multiple jurisdictions throughout the area. And it has noise canceling and allows us to move to digital technology, which will be really nice in the future for communications. In emergency situations, these are a lifeline, so we're really happy to be having that and appreciate the voter support on that. That's all I have.
Okay. Anything else from anybody? As I mentioned earlier, my goal is usually to keep the meeting to about an hour, but we had some structural business to address initially. If there is nothing else, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Can we quickly thank Alicia Schroyer for showing up here? This is very helpful.
Thank you, Alicia.
She's our key link to getting things like the emergency.
Did you want somebody to second that?
I second.
Okay. Okay, back to a need for a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? There's a second. I don't think anybody's opposed, but I will ask that first. All in favor?
Aye.
Let's go home.
All right.
I'll see you on the 26th of next month.
Sarge, I wanted to address your suggestion.
Hang on.